leaves rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, 6 rims, and numberless leaves carved upon it. Though its revolution cut short the lifespan of the entire creation, this wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The time factor cannot affect the span of life of the devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that the little execution of devotional service saves one from the greatest danger. The greatest danger is transmigration of the soul from one body to another, and only devotional service to the Lord can stop this process. It is stated in the Vedic literatures, Harim Vina Nashritim Taranti. Without the mercy of the Lord, one cannot stop the cycle of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that only by understanding the transcendental nature of the Lord and his activities, his appearance and disappearance, can one stop the cycle of death and go back to him. The time factor is divided into many fractions of moments, hours, months, years, periods, seasons, etc. All the divisions in this verse are determined according to the astronomical calculations of Vedic literature. There are 6 seasons called ritus, and there is the period of 4 months called chaturmasya. 3 periods of 4 months complete 1 year. According to Vedic astronomical calculations, there are 13 months. The 13th month is called Adimasa or Malamasa and is added every 3rd year. The time factor, however, cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees. In another verse, it is stated that when the sun rises and sets, it takes away the life of all living entities, but it cannot take away the life of those who are engaged in devotional service. Time is compared here to a big wheel which has 360 joints, 6 rims in the shape of seasons, and numberless leaves in the shape of moments. It rotates on the eternal existence, Brahman. Om Agyana Pramavandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakatamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So the translation again. Your wheel, which has 3 naves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, 6 rims, and numberless leaves carved upon it. Though its revolution cut short the lifespan of the entire creation, this wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord. So I just happened to see an advertisement for a tragic movie. It had a picture of a young woman's face, and it said, in 3 months, she will not be able to recognize her face. In 6 months, she won't be able to use her hands. In 1 year, only a miracle can save her. Apparently, it's a story about someone who has some irreversible disease, which is going to slowly reduce their body to its original elements. So, looking at that ad, I was just thinking, well, all you have to do is multiply the times a little bit, and this applies to anybody. Say, well, let's see, in 30 years you won't recognize your face. Surely in 50 years only a miracle will save you. So, there's this time factor which carries things away. And here it is referred to using the idea of the year as a wheel. So there are a number of things that can be said about this. I was thinking one interesting point has to do with the idea that everything passes away. This is a bit mysterious. It turns out in physics, if you look at the basic equations the physicists have governing matter, it turns out that they're time reversible, which means that you can run everything backwards. And that means, in one sense, nothing ever passes away. according to those equations. It's a bit of a paradoxical situation, which caused quite a bit of controversy in physics, because we see that things do pass away. But if the fundamental equations of physics say that things don't pass away, well, what's going on there? And it turns out if you look into it, a lot of issues come into play, because what happens is, according to the laws of physics, large-scale structures that you can see, such as what you see in this room, people's bodies and the structure of the room and so forth, these are gradually transformed into submicroscopic patterns in the course of time. So that means that in one sense, they never pass away, because they continue to exist on a submicroscopic level. But on the other hand, they do pass away in the sense that obviously when a pattern becomes submicroscopic, it's no longer part of our experience. So things are continually going out of large-scale existence and into submicroscopic existence. But since the equations of physics are time-reversible, that means the opposite thing has to be happening. So things must be continually passing from submicroscopic state of existence up to a large-scale state. And that includes everything that we see. So that's an implication of physics, but it's interesting to see that actually that's not accepted. Because no one is accepting that, for example, the pattern that represents you, let's say 100 years ago, existed on a submicroscopic level, and now it's just become manifest. Whereas it will be accepted that the pattern that defines you, as a physical body that is, in 100 years will continue to exist as a submicroscopic pattern. So as far as physics goes, it's completely symmetrical. But what you find is non-acceptance of the first thing and acceptance of the second, which is a little bit of a paradox hidden in modern science. But of course, the trouble with the first idea, namely that your existence was in the form of a submicroscopic pattern that became amplified, one wonders, well, where did the submicroscopic pattern come from? Now, of course, it's a fact that on one level, this is accepted, that this happens. Because when an embryo develops from a fertilized egg, you have a pattern within the egg which is certainly on a microscopic level, namely on the level of the DNA making up the genes and so forth. And then that is read out and somehow transformed to produce the ultimate child that emerges. So you do have things on a submicroscopic level coming up to the macroscopic. But the question is, where did the patterns come from on the submicroscopic level? And if you look at this picture of physics objectively, you'll see that what you ultimately would have to conclude is that either it was there from eternity on a submicroscopic level, or else some other agency had to insert it at some point. And that would be a process of creation, which is a little bit of a problem from the modern scientific perspective. But anyway, what you do find is that there's a symmetry, as far as physics goes, between creation and annihilation. And curiously enough, in Vedic literature, you also have a symmetry between creation and annihilation in the material cosmos. And then in the spiritual world, you don't have either of those principles. You just have everything eternally existing. So the process of generating the material energy is one in which the two principles of tamagun and rajagun are introduced. Tamagun is the principle that destroys everything and breaks everything down, and rajagun is the principle of creation that builds everything up. These are sort of two sides of the same coin. So anyway, some observations about time. Ultimately, time is a bit of a mystery. What is time, anyway? So, now, it's been said that astronomers don't address the question of what is time. They just measure it, which is a lot easier than figuring out what it ultimately is. So I just thought I'd mention something about the different numbers pointed out in this verse. Curious thing about this verse is that this is very much like the kind of thing that you can find in the Rig Veda. You'll find verses almost identical to this in the Rig Veda. It refers to the year, for example, as having 360 days, which is interesting. But there's, and if you look through the entire Bhagavatam, you will not anywhere find a reference to the year as having 365 days. It's 360 days in every instance. But this is a reference to a more sophisticated system based on lunar months. It turns out that in the Vedic system, the month is typically lunar. There are some solar month systems also. But a lunar month is determined by the phases of the moon. And it can go from full moon to full moon. In our calendar, that's how the months are measured. It's also possible for the lunar month to go from new moon to new moon. So if it goes from new moon to new moon, that's called Amanta. And full moon to full moon is called Purnimanta. And in most of northern India today, the Purnimanta system is used. But it used to be that the Amanta system was more common. And in South India, I understand that that is still the one that is used. So now, as it happens, a lunar month is just short of 30 days in length. Actually, it's 29.53 days. And this creates various complexities. Because, well, for one thing, you don't have an integer number of days in a month. So what they did was take that 29.53 days and divide it into 30 equal intervals. And those are called tithis. And so then you have 30 of those in a month. So it works out very nicely. It turns out that a codicy, for example, is a tithi. A codicy is not an ordinary 24-hour day, but it's one of these 30th of a month divisions. So now, as it turns out, if you have 12 months, which are about 29 point something days, you see that doesn't come out even to 360 days. It comes out a little bit short of 360. So what do you do? Well, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out here what in fact is done. It turns out you come about 10 days short, and so in 3 years you're about 30 days short. So you add another month, and that's an Adi Masa. And that's the 13th month that's being referred to in this verse. And it turns out that there are fairly sophisticated calculations for doing that. Now, I was looking into that, and there's an interesting story there having to do with the beginning of Kali Yuga. Now, we say that Kali Yuga began 5,000 years ago. But in fact, there's an exact date that Kali Yuga began on February 18th, 3102 BC. AM. Let me be more exact. Kali Yuga began at 12 o'clock in the morning on February 18th, 3102 BC. Now, this isn't like the Bishop of Usher calculating when the creation occurred, which was 4004 BC. It turns out you can find out what Vedic month that date corresponds to. And in fact, if you go back in time and consider all the Adi Masas and so forth, going back to that date, you find that that date is the first of Chaitra in 3102 BC, which is interesting because there are different systems also in India for the beginning of the year. And Srila Prabhupada alludes to that here. Pretty much the system we follow, although we don't really talk about it much, is the one in which Marga Shirsha is the beginning of the year. That's the next month after Kartik. In other words, Kartik ends the year, and then it begins again with Marga Shirsha. But another system is it begins with Chaitra. So Kali Yuga then begins on the first of Chaitra, which is appropriate. Now the interesting thing is, astronomically, it's also quite true. If you look at that date, first of Chaitra, 3102 BC, you'll find that that's a new moon day. In fact, on that date, the sun and the moon are precisely lined up, which means it's a new moon. And another interesting feature is these month names are named after constellations of stars. So Kartik, for example, is named after Kritika. And Kritika is the Pleiades. Any morning you can see that before Mangalartik. So Chaitra is named after Chitra, which is another star. There are 27 nakshatras with different names, and the months are named after them. And the system was that a month is named after a nakshatra in which the moon becomes full during that month. That's the original system. So it turns out that if you look at that date, 3102 BC, the first of Chaitra, and then you go 15 days, and you come to the full moon, the moon actually has a conjunction with Chitra. So it's an exact matchup. Now it turns out that there are a lot of other curious features about this date. It seems that all of the planets are lined up at that date. Now they're not lined up perfectly because they never line up perfectly in a straight line, but they come as close as they ever come. And in fact, one way to calculate that date is go backwards with an astronomy ephemeris and look for alignments of all of the planets in which the sun and moon go opposite Chitra, and you'll get that date. You'll get exactly the 18th of February, 3102 BC. So the date is completely determined astronomically. And another curious thing about it is if you look at Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, which supposedly weren't even known prior to 100 years ago, you'll find that they're lined up at that date also. So that's just a little bit about the Kali Yuga date. Of course, the idea is that that's a change of yugas, so everything lines up as a new starting point at that time. That's the concept behind it. So when we say that Krishna's pastimes and so on took place 5,000 years ago, you can make a much more precise statement, as it turns out. There's a lot more to that than meets the eye. So, Yeah. So, I'll stop there. Are there any questions? Yeah? I couldn't quite hear. What? Advantage to the lunar calendar versus the solar calendar. Well, the one advantage of the lunar calendar is that if you can count and look at the sky, you can tell what month it is. In fact, it was a very practical system for people who knew the constellations, because when the moon is full, or near to being full, you just see where it is in the sky, and by what constellation it is near, you know what the month is. And in practice, you have to do a little bit of simple calculation in order to know where you are in the month. But basically speaking, that would mean that anybody, let's say a farmer or cowherd boy or whatever, could know what the date was just by looking at the sky. So in that sense, it was a practical system. Whereas nowadays, I don't think we can do that. How are we going to know what the date is unless we have a calendar? So, on the other hand, you get into this complexity of the added months and so forth. So that becomes quite complicated. The Surya Siddhanta has a calculation for that that uses a series of 15-digit numbers. The neat thing, though, is the calculation works all the way back to that Kali Yuga date. I checked it out. And that means that it works for the last 5,000 years without making a mistake of a single day in the entire time, which is not bad. But anyway, yeah? Excuse me? That is about Gaur Purnima, February 18th. You see, there's a gradual shifting of things as the centuries go by. But yeah, that's about Gaur Purnima time, roughly speaking. Excuse me? I couldn't quite hear. What? Yeah. Oh, well, the Western calendar is a little bit strange if you look at September, October, November, December, because it's 7, 8, 9, 10. So you're off by two. So at some point, some change was made in the month system in the West, because we're off by 2 months. December should be 12, not 10. It's hard to say. The Western calendar is solar, of course. In India, they also have a solar system. The date given for Lord Chaitanya's birth that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave is based on solar months. Because what was it, the 23rd of Falgun, something like that? It's not a lunar month, that's a solar month. In the solar month, you just take the 365 and a quarter days and divide them into 12 equal units. So then that has nothing to do with the moon, necessarily. The moon can land anywhere. Full moon can land anywhere in a solar month. But in one sense, it's easier as far as the year is concerned. Murli Vatika? Well, it's a rather helter-skelter theory if you think about it, because it means that just like everything that you have in this room, all the people in it, all the detailed features of them, would be stored up, let's say, a million years ago in the form of tiny situations in the position of atoms. So all that would have to be encoded in that way. In such a way, then, as time passes, that information comes out and finally becomes manifest to form the patterns of people and so on that you see in this room. So it's just like a completely disunified catalog of information. You just have to say that all that data is just there. And it was there a million years ago because it was there a million and 1 years ago. And that's because it was there a million and 2 years ago, and so on, ad infinitum. So there's something a little bit unsatisfactory about that. You could call that the chaotic catalog theory. But the Krishna theory means you have to go beyond atoms and numbers and so forth and describe something that's essentially unified. Of course, a lot of scientists will jump ship immediately as soon as you start saying something like that. But the idea is that you have an eternally existing source that has unity and harmony in it, whereas this chaotic catalog just has this little bit of information and that little bit of unrelated information and so on, just there somehow. Well, the trouble with the simple idea is that ultimately information cannot be compressed beyond a certain limit. Nowadays, you can learn about this with computers because information compression has now become an important thing for computers. To cram more stuff onto your hard disk, you have an information compression algorithm. Now, the trouble is if you compress it too much, you can't get it back. It's like what I was saying about reversible and irreversible transformations. So information is compressible to a point. And then if you compress it more, then you lose information. So if you say everything was simple, that would imply unlimited compressibility of information. But is that possible? Such a thing hasn't been demonstrated, and there's very good evidence against it. So information theory goes against Darwin's theory of evolution. Or what it amounts to is, it says Darwin's theory of evolution ultimately depends on pure chance. All the talk about physical processes of selection and so on really misses the essence of the thing. The essence of it is pure chance. Yeah? Mm-hmm. It happens on various occasions. Alignments that good happen every, let's say, 3,000 years or so. I checked it for the last 6,000 years. Computers are great fun. What I did was just get an ephemeris program, and I had it check every day for the last 6,000 years. That is from 4,000 BC up to 2,000 AD. And it ran for 3 days on a Pentium. But I got a readout of, you know, the planetary positions every day for the last 6,000 years. So I know how many alignments there were. And it turned out there were three as good as the one in Kali Yuga. And there were two others, as it turned out. So it's a pretty darn good alignment. Events at the others, at the other dates. Well, you see, the trouble with that question is that history is full of disasters. Practically any year you can think of, something horrible happens. So it's hard to say, but the two other dates, one of them was about 1500 BC and the other one was about 1000 BC. So, yeah, they came close together, but those were the only ones. There were none in the AD period, curiously. So, that's the way it worked out, yeah?
The wheel in this verse, is that a metaphorical wheel, or is that like the thing you had before with the chariot and the axis? Is that bad?
That's a metaphorical wheel, too. Yeah, it's a metaphorical wheel. Although you can see it every night if you like. The wheel of time, all the stars spin around every night. You can say the Big Dipper is like the hand of a clock, because the Big Dipper never, well, it's under the horizon for part of the time. If you could see the Little Dipper more clearly, that would be a really nice clock hand, but it's hard to see. But you'd see it just spins around once every night, like a big clock. And then if you note the stars, every morning if you look at the pattern of stars, you'll see it shifted a little bit. For example, the Pleiades, just before Mangalartik now, the Pleiades are over there. You go back to about June, and they were just on the horizon coming up just before Mangalartik. So things are gradually shifting. So in a sense, you have a real clock in the sky. But it's also metaphorical, because 360, what have you got, joints, it says. Well, that refers to days, obviously. 13 spokes would be months, and so forth. So in the fifth canto, where it refers to the chariot of the sun, it's also a metaphorical chariot, because it's made of months and seasons and so forth. So, Pritu, Priyavrata, right. Well, the sun isn't metaphorical. I would say the chariot of the sun described in the fifth canto is metaphorical because it explicitly says that it's made of seasons, months, and so forth. So, that's metaphorical. Well, they're probably not metaphorical. Well, I've always wondered about that, because not only that, the Valakilias are the size of a thumb, right? So you have the sun, which is rather large, by all estimates, and then the sages in front of it are not just our size, which would be extremely small compared to the sun, but they're the size of a thumb, as a matter of fact. So, pardon me? Ah, whose thumb? Ah, that's a good question. I have to be careful with those sizes of thumbs. But in any case, of course, there's a story about the Valakilias and Garuda. It seems that once upon a time, there was a gigantic tortoise and a gigantic, I believe, elephant. And they were fighting since time immemorial. I almost think that they were supposed to be an incarnation of Vashishta and Vishvamitra in order to carry out their famous feud. So they were truly in the spirit of feuding. So this gigantic elephant and gigantic tortoise were battling away. And meanwhile, Garuda was quite young. He had just hatched out. And he was a little bit awkward as a youth. Anyway, he was hungry. And Garuda is not a vegetarian. So he was directed to eat the elephant and the tortoise to put them out of their misery. So he grabbed one in each set of talons and flew off with them. And then he had to find a place to land in order to eat them, as any proper bird would do. So he landed on the limb of this gigantic tree, and the limb was many miles across or something like that. And of course his weight was so great that the limb broke off with a tremendous cracking sound. And he realized at that moment that the Valakilias were on the limb of that tree. Excuse me? That's the length of the branch? Okay. Well, I mean, in 800 miles you can have a pretty big thumb. So anyway, the branch cracked off, and Garuda was warned, well, don't offend these sages. If they curse you, that would not be good. So he grabbed onto the branch, still holding onto the elephant and the tortoise, and I forget exactly how it ended up, but he managed to gently deposit the sages and then have his meal. So anyway, small note on the Valakilias. Pardon me? Well, anyway. So,
by all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
You showed physically the graphic of the wheel and the axis, like it really existed, but you're saying it doesn't though? See, that's what I'm saying. Like, why did you make that? Because I thought you were trying to show us the physical makeup of the universe on a different dimension.
You have to see what I did in the video. Because you see, the sun chariot is, the reason I say it's metaphorical is it's described.
Suns and, you're saying that seasons and days.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't say Brahmanda was metaphorical.
Brahmanda?
Bhumandala.
Oh, forget about that. Yeah.
It doesn't say that's metaphor. So, that's described as having real inhabitants. It also doesn't say that those sages are metaphor.
Right.
But if it says the wheel is made of so many months and seasons,
so that's what I'm saying. Why did you show the wheel?
Well, you see, what I'm showing in that video, and the purpose of the video is for presenting this thing to scientific people also. And what I'm showing is that the dimensions work out according to astronomy.
Oh, I see.
Now,
so what you should say is?
What I did say, if you listen to what I said in the video, you hear me say, in fact, even that Bhumandala is a map. That's what I actually said. I said, well, this can be viewed as a map, and I even showed it visually in the beginning part of the video. I faded out the colorful picture and showed a diagram made of white lines.
Right.
And so this can be seen as a map of the solar system.
I was just under the impression that that chariot wheel was real. Maybe if you could just say, you flash off the thing and say, this is actually made up of months, days, and years, or something like that.
I did say
it. You did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I just said it.
Yeah.
Have you been working that out a lot lately? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been working on different related aspects.
Because I know there's a different dimension in that whole thing with the astrological, the Vedic planetarium that one person was working on. They said it was impossible or something.
Oh, yeah.
The different creation and all that. There's so many different dimensions.
Well, you see, there are higher dimensions.
Right. Which is hard to build physically out of material.
Well, you have to explain the whole thing in terms of physically how higher dimensions can work. And that's another whole subject to go into, which I've talked about quite a lot also.
But that would be, you're addressing that in your video also, aren't you? In that
video, no. Because it's too much to go into in that one video. Basically, there's two aspects to the approach in presenting the big form of cosmology. One is to say that there's real astronomy there. It's not just some mythological story. Because you see, if it's just a mythological story, then you wouldn't expect the numbers to correspond to anything that's actually measurable by astronomers. But they do, in fact.
So that proves that those numbers are real. Well, that's your point.
My point is it proves that whoever came up with this really knew something about science as we have it today. In other words, we're not just dealing with a mythological story. My point is, even an astronomer of today would have to agree that there's something really scientific in the fifth canto. And that's a big admission to make in the beginning. Because the standard response to something like the fifth canto would be that this is just a poetry made up by some totally unscientific person. But my point is, no, there's some real astronomy there. So that's the first point. Now, once that is accepted, then the point I'm going to make is that there are higher dimensions being described here also. So that's why we don't literally see all that cosmic geography.
Of the big tree and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, where is the tree with the branch 800 miles long?
Where's Mount Meru?
Where's Mount Meru?
Yeah, that was the thing you were showing me, wasn't it?
Right.
That thing, yeah.
But you know what Prabhupada says about Mount Meru?
It's something we play around in heaven.
He says that while we're learning this book, it's not as long as Meru, but it's kind of really weird. It's all really analyzed. We're over it.
We're over it. We're not very hot. Yeah. Yeah.
But,
well,
I mean, it's kind of just to say that.
Are there plane routes through where Mount Sumeru is supposed to be? Like, what? How?
No plane routes through there.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's another argument.
Yes, probably should have created one of those boxes around 7 feet. Probably jumped up 80 miles high. 8,000. No, where is it?
Probably in the sky.
Oh, you said that too. So like, dude, I've seen it.
Yeah, probably we should say 5 miles high.
That's just the highest. I don't think that's the highest.
Yeah.
This is the highest climb.
It's supposed to be the highest mountain.
Awesome.
Oh, really?
Whoa. Yeah.
I bet there's a one of those.
Well, Hawaii, I don't know, bigger than the ocean.
Well, if you go to the ocean floor, yeah,
Hawaii,
that's high. That's pretty cool. Or you can, I think, Aconcagua in South America, Bolivia, someplace like that, is higher if you take into account the equatorial bulge of the Earth down closer to the equator. It's actually higher from the center of the Earth, measured out than every other area. Technicality.
So my point was, like, the things that exist, like Mount Sumeru, is not just a myth. It actually exists on some plane.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was in the chariot, doesn't it?
Well, they say that the chariot is made of...
Like, is there some guy actually sitting in it and driving the sun?
A lunar.
I was there. I was a member. The dog was a
higher dimensional
for solid. That works better. Peter Martin runs the whole hard cage. Try to figure this out. Try to figure this out. Hard cage at least it's a hard cage doesn't want to tell us.
What
math
are you working on?
Before that, the problem is still here. They told me it was coming.
What, who was trying to make the baby for you? He gave up. Did you tell me that? Is it a
camp? I heard it's from Denver City.
He sure did say that. He's trying to stop me from doing it.
He's still trying.
That's the issue of the whole country. Is that the reason?
Yeah, that's the risk.
Well, there is that one conversation where Brother Billy then kept it on phone and all. He didn't understand it. He kept trying to say, well, see, Bart Bosch should have done it. Now that whole conversation, Bart said, you're also going to have to understand. Well, probably one of them is trying to go there. I guess Sri Dunbar was there. He felt that he was going to do that.
Then I thought he gave orders later that it should be built.
More than
probably in those days, when they said it should be done.
They kept emphasizing the
message. That's why they were asking about it. That's why you were working the drawing.
I know, but Sudamar is there, small. I remember walking out from that conversation. I said, gee, you know, I can read the first piano part for this one too. Such and probably compares that to a different version. But he just said they were subtle, so I'm going to say that, you know, but then I think it was taken out, that whole thing of Mark would be going to talk about. When the corrections ever made, especially they would go to India, and they were reading his translation, and they were probably one of the translations. And finally, this guy was doing it, and they'd get it. And my heart was just
what do you mean? What kind of mistake? I'm just saying numbers.
I'm just pointing out numbers. They probably had a thing that is only in that. They were sort of already looking like there was dollars funded. Fucking right. And they never had anything to do with that. And we're at close air force also. We're at the structure that way. I'm about to say, probably didn't want to have this correctable.
Basically, the promise of this time is regarding the campus and the intended place for the
service. I always remember Itai after he came to LA in 75. Sitting in LA for the LA public service. He's chucking me. I think a big auto bus is loaded. For different reasons.
Well, you can find it a bit cheap right now.
In the fifth camp.
So as far as the fifth camp, though, in the beginning, you can get as far as the to describe the universe fully is impossible.
Right.
He doesn't say that what I'm about to tell you is inconceivable. I just wonder why saying it is.